we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
When it comes to medical practice, physicians need to take a lesson from veterinarians. I'm Dr. Marilyn Singleton, and welcome to America Out Loud Pulse, always a beat ahead. Governments, doctors, and patients are looking for ways to improve healthcare quality and lower costs. Legislators have made attempts with the Healthcare Price Transparency Act, but this doesn't get to the core of the perverse medical care pricing system. Insurers bargain for prices with various health systems and hospitals and even office practices. This negotiated price, though, can be up to double the price offered to so-called self-pay patients who offer to pay cash, even if they have insurance. More and more these days, insured patients are on the hook for more costs because the employers have tried to save money and they've switched to high-deductible insurance plans. According to the Kaiser Family Foundation, annual deductibles in 2021 were as high as $2,398, and this has gone up and up and up over the last 10 years. And then the insured people have to pay a copayment. This can be a fixed amount, anywhere from $25 to $50, or a percentage, when the percentage is usually 20% of the cost of the visit. And let's remember, the insurance rate is higher than the cash rate. So once you pay your 20%, you could be paying more than the cash rate. So what's a patient to do to save money while still getting good medical care? When patients choose to get care from a physician or other healthcare professional who has a cash-based practice, the fees can be very low. Why? They've cut out the middleman, the insurer. This means no salary for an office worker to sit on the phone all day with an insurance company trying to extract payments. Dealing with a cash-based practice also leads you to other areas with reduced fees like x-rays, CAT scans, MRIs, lab tests, and prescription drugs. Now, why should physicians be more like veterinarians? The vets love their patients, and many have a sign like this in their offices. You are invited to discuss frankly with us any question regarding our services or fees. The best medical services are based on a friendly, mutual understanding between the patient and doctor. My guest today has operated a caring, compassionate, cash-based medical practice, and we'll discuss how she got there. We'll also get into human behavior and politics and how they influence the practice of medicine. Dr. Kathleen M. Brown is a clinical dermatologist who has innovated in developing and promoting the direct pay model of clinical practice. She graduated from the College of William and Mary in Virginia with majors in biology and music and earned her MD degree from Eastern Virginia Medical School. And she completed both dermatology and internal medicine residencies. After practicing in a multi-specialty group, she opened up a solo direct pay dermatology practice and just loved practicing medicine like that. She also enjoys mentoring other dermatologists who are interested in direct pay practice and networking with others who have an interest in free market solutions to healthcare problems. Welcome, Dr. Brown.
It's great to be with you.
Well, I'll tell you, let's just start at the beginning. Now, you practiced in Oregon, and I remember this several years back, the Oregon government making medical waves over actively deciding to ration medical care. I'd like, since you were there, how'd that work? What was the outcome? Did it save money? What did it do to you? All of the above. Go for it.
Okay, so that's Oregon Health Plan, and they rationed by prioritized list. When I arrived in Oregon at the end of 1997, that was already in place. And I'm not a fan of HMOs or managed care, but it kind of seemed to make sense. So they had this long list by diagnosis, and their top diagnosis was intracranial hemorrhage, which means bleeding inside the skull in the brain. And so that, you know, that made a lot of sense. It's pretty rare. It's very expensive. And, you know, if anything ought to be covered, something like that ought to be. So years later, their top diagnosis was prenatal care. So the cynical part of me would say that there's a lot more people making money off prenatal care. It's certainly important, but it doesn't, it seems arbitrary. It seems that that doesn't really make any sense. So what basis are they deciding this on? You know, is it, you know, severity, or is it, you know, prevention? So there was that. And then in 2002, very early on in my experience in Oregon, after 9/11, there was a big budget downturn, and Oregon gets a lot of revenue from income tax, and they don't have a sales tax. So they cut a lot of diagnoses out. So those patients, if they had a diagnosis of, say, in my specialty of dermatology, psoriasis, it just wasn't covered anymore. Scarring, acne, eczema, all these kind of miserable things that aren't generally going to kill you. So they just cut those things off. Well, years go by, and they never put them back. You know, Oregon Health Plan or Medicaid in Oregon used to pay doctors pretty poorly, but over the years, it began to be paying doctors, at least where I was, a lot better than Medicare. And yet they never put the diagnoses back for those patients. So, I mean, that's just the beginning of it. And then, of course, there's a lot of lost money. There was a lot of scandal with Oregon Medicaid, and a newspaper, the Register Guard, wrote that up. So a very mixed blessing, and I'll stop there.
Well, what did the patients do who they're on Medicaid, meaning they don't have a lot of money to spend on healthcare, but they remove their diagnosis from the priority list? Does that mean if the state had some extra money, then they'd pay for the eczema treatment?
I don't think so. they could get in to see their primary care doctor, but a lot of times their primary care doctor, you know, they would try in general, a lot of them would try to help their patient, but they would pretty quickly exhaust, you know, it's not really what they do, you know, once they'll do the preliminaries, and, you know, if somebody responds easily, fine. But a lot of people with those conditions that I mentioned, along with many other, really do need a specialist. And there's a lot of studies, too, that say that actually treatment by a specialist is more cost effective because, you know, diagnosis is going to be more accurate and treatment is going to be more precise. So, you know, a lot of times those people just had suboptimal or no treatment for their miserable condition.
I find it interesting what you said about going straight to a specialist being more cost effective. I just, over the years, have seen that over and over, because the specialist so many times instantly knows what, in your case, the rash is or whatever it is, and instantly knows the treatment. So you leave out a lot of trying a bunch of stuff, and that takes more time and more visits, and therefore ultimately costs more to the system as well as the patient.
I completely agree.
So what do you think goes into making good medical care? and getting to a really good patient-doctor relationship?
Well, I've been called not a speedy doctor, but I mean, I think I'm as fast as any dermatologist at diagnosing something that can immediately be diagnosed by eye. I think communication, number one, finding out what it is that is concerning the patient, getting an accurate history, not just delegating that history taking to someone with lesser skills. Doing a good specialty exam, the physical exam gets shortchanged a lot these days, but I mean, particularly and especially like dermatology, if you don't look, you don't find. If you're looking for skin cancers, you need to look, you know, everywhere that the patient's going to let you look, or you're going to miss things. You know, there's a lot of melanomas on scalps, and you know, you need to look carefully behind ears. And so all of that thoroughness, communication, and that takes time. And that's not, you know, chit-chatting with someone. That's working hard to try to do right by them.
And I think so much is a matter of trust, and the way you can help get trust in that relationship is by taking time and talking to the patient. There's so many things that you can discover. I have to admit, I get nervous eczema, and I can see it come and go with my mental state. And I can't imagine that when you see patients, you're going to find out the same thing by taking some time with a history.
Well, we agree on a lot of things. I think we have a similar philosophy. It's easy to agree. I think trust is the foundation of medicine. There's so many things also that we just don't know. I mean, you want to establish that rapport with someone that you've just met or you only see every now and then so that they are able to trust in you. But, you know, honesty is part of trust. And, you know, there's just a lot of things in medicine that we don't know, and we don't admit that all the time. I think that's important. You don't want to undermine, you know, your patient's confidence by saying, well, I don't know anything. Well, you know a lot, but there's also a lot of things that we don't know. And so, yeah, all of that fits together. And you have to form that bond, that rapport pretty quickly, because even if you have a lot of time, it's still not that much. And so, trust is the very foundation, and we often undermine it, I'm sad to say, in medical practice. There's many ways that the medical system undermines trust, but it's very essential in treating a patient to have a mutually trusting sort of relationship.
Well, it's very interesting as an anesthesiologist and being in the field when it went from doing pre-op visits on patients the night before their surgery to suddenly outpatient or morning admission surgery, where it was hurry up, rush, rush, the OR is turning over, you've got to get in there, and you're meeting the patient for the first time. They might have been seen by a nurse in pre-op clinic, but that's not who's going to put their life in their hands. And it was an amazing thing. I really felt like residents needed to have lessons in how you get a patient to believe you're competent in 7 minutes. And it takes a lot. And what you said about being able to say, I don't know, and learning how to say, I don't know, in a way where you're admitting that you're not an oracle and can see all and know all, but you do have a strong knowledge base, and it's a tough thing to try to get across in a short period of time. Many times I longed for those inpatient admissions, just like the old days, where you could sit down in a chair and look at the patient face to face and have a nice little conversation about what was going to happen to them in the next day. So
yes. Well, I have to say I've had good experience with anesthesiologists So.
Well, you've been very lucky, and I wish everybody that's listening, remember, we're very well trained and kind of apologize for the whole system of having to rush people through and only being seen by the person the morning of. But this seems to be the way things have gone in medicine. When we come back on the other side, we're going to talk about basically how all these ideas about what makes a good doctor, what makes a good relationship, can lead somebody into having a cash-based practice. Well, for now, I want to thank everybody for listening to America Out Loud Pulse. You know, we've got our free apps on Apple and Android and Alexa, and you can hear us every weekday at 5 p.m. with an encore at 10 p.m. and on iHeartRadio at 8 a.m. the next morning, on your way to work if you're so lucky. All shows go direct to podcast in 24 hours. That's what I love, so you can listen to it anytime. And they're on all the networks, Apple and Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, Stitcher, and iHeart. So make it easy. Bookmark AmericaOutloud.com/pulse. Let's just give you the lineup. Mondays, it's me, Marilyn Singleton. Tuesdays, with concerned doctors, Dr. Jordan Vaughn and Dr. Stuart Tankersley. Wednesdays, with Dr. Peter McCulloch of Malcolm Out Loud. Thursdays with Dr. Peter Bregan and Ginger Ross Bregan, and Fridays with Nurse Jody O'Malley. So I love the lineup. The best part to me about the show is that there's a different person every night. And so take your pick or listen to them all.
Hello, I'm Ben Marble, MD, and I founded MyFreeDoctor.com as a donation-supported, faith-based nonprofit with a mission to save lives by delivering free doctor visits to patients in all 50 states of America. MyFreeDoctor.com treats a broad range of health concerns like COVID-19, long COVID, sinus infections, urinary tract infections, rashes, medication refills, and more. So please visit MyFreeDoctor.com, where we're healing America one person at a time.
Here on America Out Loud, we emphasize optimal health, and air is the most essential element for life. The average person inhales over 35 pounds of air every day, yet we seldom think about how to rid the air of pathogens swiftly and safely when we need to. The Genesis Fogger Plus HOCL is the only way to quickly and naturally restore air to its optimal condition. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud for a free ebook on everything you need to know about HOCL and receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you'll be ready for what's next.
America Out Loud beats to the pulse of our nation. We know when you're angry, you're troubled, confused, glad, and thankful. We know you because we are you. Join us as we explore the most important issues of our time. We are America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
So now we're going back into Dr. Brown's journey into a cash-based practice. So you were in a group practice, and then after a while, you changed. Tell me how all that went.
Yes, I really liked my group practice. It was a small multi-specialty group practice on the coast of Oregon. It had been, we celebrated a 50th birthday for the group while I was there. An old practice, a good practice, pediatricians, internal medicine. I joined as an internal medicine doctor as well as dermatology. But as time went on, one of the realities for me is I was getting financially squeezed. Over about 10 years' time, Medicare payment was flat while my overhead increased by about 35%. And at the end of that period, around 2010, about half of my gross income was from Medicare. And, you know, the weird thing in medicine, as you well know, is that prices are different for different people based on, you know, who's paying it, who's their insurance. So it's a very, very strange system, very unlike the grocery store, the restaurant, or the veterinarian. So I didn't even know what percentage of patients that was. So it was probably higher than that. I was in a very underserved area. I was very, very busy. And at some point, I stopped taking new patients because I wanted my, you know, we're booking appointments farther and farther out, and I wanted my existing patients to be able to get in when they needed. So I prioritized them over taking new patients. But, you know, that's an important decision to make. And a lot of people just like see more patients in a day, but then you see them faster, you delegate. So I made a decision. I wanted to maintain the quality of my practice. Well, that had long-term ramifications of my patients were growing into Medicare. They were getting older. So I kind of painted myself into a corner. I was in a group, and they had a lot of Medicaid patients in obstetrics and pediatrics particularly, which was paying way better than Medicare. So interesting situation. But what I found was my workload was going up and my pay was going down, and I was getting home later and later at night. Even though I wasn't taking new patients, you know, I was very, very busy. I had a nurse practitioner hired and trained, and then she left after a while because her husband didn't like it, something like that. So then I had all these additional patients, and it just, you know, I don't even want to be too personal about it, but it was just like hard to go to work in the morning. I felt like I was going to cry. I felt like I was saying sorry all day long. Sorry, I keep you waiting. Sorry, I'm home late at night. Sorry, you had a long wait for this appointment. Sorry that I can't address everything. It was just getting, it was getting impossible. And so, you know, what could I do? My husband had a, we had kids in school. My husband had a business. He had multiple employees. So that was when I decided, with my husband's help, to make a complete break and just go out on my own and charge by time. And so I did. And, you know, I had it in my head for a long, for a number of years of what would be kind of ideal. And my husband helped me do it. We renovated a space in a building that we own. My husband had his business there. And all these people were telling us, including telling my husband, other doctors telling us, that will never work. You know, that will never work. Who would come to you? What about people who have insurance? And I was pretty much busy from day one. So people came, they decided if that was, they'd call on the phone, they decide if this was okay with them. They knew they were asked to pay at the time of, they paid at the end of the visit. And I was busy. So I think the proof is in the pudding. I had a nicer day. I still worked really, really hard, but I mean, it was great. And I did that for almost 8 years until we decided to move to Montana.
Wow. You know, it kind of reminds me of what was that Field of Dreams? If you build it, they will come, or how, yes. However that says. And I think people underestimate what patients really want out of a doctor visit. Obviously, they want competence. There used to be a saying in surgery that the top three things a surgeon needed was availability, affability, and ability, in that order. Now, I don't know if I necessarily like the order, but we all know we want somebody who's capable and competent. But we also want somebody that cares and can spend an appropriate amount of time with us. And as somebody who grew up with a father as a family practice doctor, I saw the time he spent with his patients, and to see that get eroded over the years in medicine is really pretty distressing, I'd say. And you realize patients need someone they can talk to, not their girlfriends, not their guy friends over a beer, but somebody, a non-judgmental person who will listen. And that's what these kind of, I think that's what patients know is behind some of these cash-based practices. They know that you're not part of a system, that you're a real person. And because you're an individual person, you'll treat them like an individual person.
100%. Different people, everybody comes in with something different. And in dermatology, you know, a lot of things are very quick and easy. People come in, they're worried something could be cancer, and you look at it, you can identify it and say, this is a this, it's okay. You know, doctor, are you sure of it? Yes, I am. How are you sure of it? You explain it, you know, this is what you can do with it. And then they're relieved and they either have it treated or they don't, and they leave and they're happy and it was quick. And there's other people who've suffered for years with something. They want to be heard. There's a lot of people who come in with multiple questions. And, you know, that's not tolerated in a lot of offices. I'm, you know, like, oh, somebody comes in with 8 questions. My staff generally would let, you know, they do the preliminaries. But they'd let me know how many. I was like, I want to know everything that they're concerned about. And when I'd see that they had 10 things, you know, we kind of start with what's most important to you. So I had that freedom. And what we did find is that it sounds shocking to a lot of dermatologists who see very high volume, but we schedule most of our visits, especially new patient visits, for half an hour. And we generally use that time because people do have a lot of things they've either saved up or they want to talk about. And then if they didn't need all that time, you know, I always had things I could, you know, I could work on. I had, you know, pathology results in my inbox and phone calls I needed to return. So we just scheduled it that way. And it's kind of really shocking to other dermatologists that we scheduled that much time. But we found that if we didn't, you know, we were going to run behind. People did want the time for whatever, you know, for whatever reason that they in particular had.
Well, that's very interesting because I think most people would agree that time is one of the best things that you can give a patient. People need to feel listened to. They need to feel valued, and giving them time imparts that idea. And I think most people listening would sit here and say, wow, I would love to spend a half hour with the doctor, unimpeded, uninterrupted. And I think patients understand. I used to tell this to patients sometimes when they would complain that their doctor was late. And I said, well, you never know what's wrong with the patient that they're seeing before you. That patient, their husband might have died or had some other awful thing happen in their life. And so the doctor has the choice. You either continue that discussion with the person or you kick them out. But if it was you, which would you want? You know,
yes, that, very, very true. You know, one of the things I did, I had a very full service office. I had a really nice laser. I did a lot of biopsies. I did a lot of surgical excisions. I had phototherapy for psoriasis. I had a lot of things that I could offer. But the coding and billing system often kind of punishes for doing multiple things on the same day. And so patients will say, well, my doctor said that they weren't allowed to do this on the same day. Well, that's not really true. It's that they will often, you know, be only paid 50% if they do it on the same day. So they make people come back and they don't really say it because maybe they're kind of embarrassed. But so that was one of the things I did, too. People come in and it's like, oh, you know, that actually is a skin cancer. I think it's a this. I'd explain it. And, you know, it really ought to be biopsied before a definitive treatment so that we're certain. And, oh, by the way, I have a mole I want removed, they may say. And, you know, we just like hustle up and my staff would come in and do a, you know, setup, get the procedure ready. And then I go see somebody else and then I come back and do it. And so that was very nice, too. That's part of that time thing of being able to do things on the same day. I didn't charge them less, but I charged them a very fair price, and they were very happy that they didn't have to take off work again or drive a long way. I was in a fairly rural area. People would have to drive a long way. So it was really nice to get as many things done as possible if they wanted them done then, if they were agreeable to it.
Well, how do patients afford cash? I mean, what happens? You're just a regular person, regular job. You're not rich. And, you know, you were in a rural area. And so people aren't making boatloads of money. How do they afford it? How do they budget having to pay cash to a physician?
Well, I made sure that our fees were good. I mean, they were good. And people who were really on a budget, they would often tell my staff when they came in, and I'd have a little post-it note. We used paper charts at that point. I'd probably use computer now, but I'd have like a little post-it note on it. They brought $80. They brought $60. And I'd go in and I'd say, my staff let me know that you're on a budget, and, you know, let's not waste time. Let's get things done. Again, kind of, you know, what's most important to you? Where do you want to start? And we just get it done. And then, you know, if we had samples, we were very good at finding affordable medications. A lot of times that amount was very close or lower than their copay. So a lot of people have copays of $60. So, you know, if somebody walked out with the full price of $75 and their copay was $60, they're pretty darn happy, partly because they would have had to come back for two or three visits to get that same amount done a lot of times. So, you know, they could figure it out that it was pretty affordable. Now, for people who it really wasn't affordable at all, often they did have other options. And, you know, we would always encourage on the phone. My staff spent a lot of time on the phone, you know, do what's best for you. Over, you know, do we have a payment plan? No, we did not have a payment plan. You know, it was like I'd have to charge more if I had a payment plan. So they would make a decision. And for the very few people who decided to come in that really couldn't pay for it, I had once a month a half day session where I charged either $10 or $20. And I would offer that to people. And I had, few people on that every month. And then, that's pretty much what we did. And this is an amazing thing. A lot of my dermatology colleagues who think about doing this, they're thinking about, well, we got to collect it up front before they're even seen. We got to get a credit card on file. In almost 8 years, we did not do credit card on file. We did not do payment up front. We did payment as they left when we knew what they had done. I had five people in almost 8 years who really shorted me on payment. That's it. I didn't have anybody who completely stiffed me, not a single one. And one of them was short by $10, said he'd come back and didn't, you know. Mm-hmm. And altogether, I think I was not paid by, I think, maybe $700, $800 total in almost 8 years. And that kind of renews your faith in people. First of all, I think when they receive a service and they receive an excellent service, a caring service, an excellent staff, wonderful office environment, all of that, and they leave, if they leave without paying and they don't intend to pay, it's very clear that it's theft. And they know that the price is reasonable. So, you know, if there were people who came in and, you know, I did have a few who, like, they had a great big nasty melanoma. and, you know, I'd find out what are their resources? What is their insurance? I'd refer them elsewhere if there was somebody else who could take care of them well. So we would have those discussions. And if I wanted to, you know, just write off, and I say write off, just discount, you know, I could do that. That was my discretion. And if it was an appropriate situation, such as melanoma, when someone with very little money and no insurance, then I did. You know, that was up to me.
Well, I think that's great. And again, the idea of being outside of the system gives you that discretion, because if you're signed up for Medicaid, God forbid, you say, oh, I'm only going to charge you $5 to do this, that, or the other, that's considered healthcare fraud. You can't treat patients differently financially, but you ought to be able to. Everyone has their own circumstances. My father got paid in tamales sometimes. Mm-hmm. My goodness, you know, the government bean counters wouldn't know what to do with that.
Oh, well, that's a nice way to be paid. I didn't do very much. It's a whole tax thing. But again, every now and then I had someone on the Oregon coast who's like, would you like some, you know, fresh cooked king crab? Oh, I'm not king crab, Dungeness crab. Oh, yes. Yes, I would.
Absolutely. Well, when we get back, we're going to talk a little bit more about what a lot of people think are solutions to some of the healthcare cost problems and our opinions about it. For now, I'm just going to remind everybody, I've been talking about my new best friend, Cofix RX, which is something that was developed when COVID came out. I always try not to talk about COVID, but I kind of have to here. And when everybody was looking for a way to ward off COVID and to ward it off early, this is a nasal spray that is based basically with iodine. It's got other things, vitamin D and some xylitol, all of which are antiviral and antibacterial. And you just squirt the Cofix up your nose a couple times a day, and it helps ward off these viruses, because most of the viruses come through the nose. So if you can stop it when it's incubating in the nose for a couple of days, it might limit the impact of a huge viral invasion, giving you pneumonia or making you sicker. So I hope you'll investigate Cofix RX, not just take my word for it. We have a little button for it on our page, and just click it on, learn a little more about it. But I just feel, sort of knock on wood, it's helped both me and my husband stay healthy and try to nip these things in the bud.
While many things we hear are lies, we know one thing is true. Viruses exist and people get sick. Look, there's no guaranteed way to keep from getting sick, but there is a way to reduce your chances. Cofix RX, the original povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray that you hear Dr. McCullough talking about, provides an additional, invisible layer of protection from colds, flu, coronaviruses, and more. Click the banner ad on AmericaOutloud.com and use promo code OUTLOUD for 20% off. Stay protected with Cofix RX.
These days, every time you turn on the news, it seems like there's a new threat to your health. Maintaining a strong immune system has never been more critical. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost to help you strengthen your immunity. Unlike other supplements that don't work, Immune Super Boost is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed nutrients proven to support immunity, like vitamin C, D3, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea. These physician-formulated gels come in a small gel pack. Tear off the top and shoot it down, or mix it in water. Boost your immunity. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited-time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD.
So, speaking of nipping in the bud, we want good health for everybody. We want health that's reasonably priced and in a good patient-doctor relationship. And this is what Dr. Brown's been describing. Some people, when they look at healthcare costs, sit there and say, well, let's just have the government take over healthcare, then it won't cost anything. Of course, that seems a bit short-sighted since it costs somebody something. But already I can close my eyes and see several things wrong with just having the government take over. What do you think about a government takeover of healthcare?
Well, I kind of blame them for ruining it, but, you know, that's, we've come down a long path there, but I think, you know, people debate that, but I do think that, you know, Medicare is one of the things, and of course people love having Medicare. A lot of times they love, and they don't pay much, you know, they pay for their B and then they pay for their supplement and that's going up. But no, I think anything that's top down managed, and then the money is pooled and nobody's really accountable. And it's just a mess. I think we all across the political spectrum, we know that it's a mess. I did want to say that, you know, before I had 50% of my gross income Medicare. Well, once I was in my direct pay practice, all the prices were the same for everybody, unless I discounted it, but they were reasonable. And yeah, my schedule was full with people who could afford it, even though it wasn't an affluent area. But I still had one third of my gross income, or one third of my patient services were Medicare. And these were people who were not going to get reimbursed. Maybe they could get 20% from the supplement, but usually that wasn't successful. And they had to decide, were they willing to pay for it? And I had all these people who were on fixed income and had Medicare, had a supplement, had Medicare A, Medicare B, Medicare Advantage, and they came and they paid. And I think, you know, that says something about not just the time, the listening, but sometimes it saved them travel. But what did they get? They got the trust. They had the expertise. So they had to think about it. But I had people who came in and they paid for skin cancer excisions, which, you know, cost a little bit more. I always offered to refer them elsewhere. And there were plenty of people who chose to have me do it for one reason or another.
Because you're very good now. Come on. You can't say it, but I can.
I'm very conscientious and I have a good eye and good skills. And, you know, yeah. And I treated them nicely. So, you know, we had a 90-some-year-old lady in a wheelchair, and she had a very large, very rapidly growing skin cancer on her face. And it's really not a very nice experience for someone that age in a wheelchair to go into even outpatient surgery. They would be nice to her, but she'd sit there in a cold room for a couple of hours. And we just totally took care of her. She was just, you know, completely, I don't want to say baby, but, you know, the TLC. She got the TLC and her family chose that for her because they knew that she would have a much nicer experience. And my cell phone and the follow-up phone calls and, you know, all of that.
Well, good experience. And I think we all know that's what people want. And it's interesting to me that when people talk about healthcare policy and stuff, you don't hear a lot of the mainstream think tanks pushing for cash-based, and they tend to push for more government control. And it makes me kind of wonder why. You know, are they trying to get the individual out of the mix? Are they trying to turn us more into compliant drones that can be manipulated? You know, this kind of march toward let's everybody be the same, unless we don't want you to be the same and want to categorize you in one way or another. What do you think it is that this isn't really pushed, that the push continues to be government, government, government?
Well, I think, you know, some of the cynical part of it is there's a lot of people who have vested interests, the so-called middlemen, middle people. You know, there's a lot of people whose jobs are in the middle. But I also think this is a human nature thing, but there's a certain, I'm very opinionated, but a certain vanity, a certain hubris, lack of humility, that we can plan. It's a central planning idea. We know what's better for you. And I'm a big Thomas Sowell fan. He talks about consequential knowledge. He's an economist. You know, he's an economist, but a lot of people may not. And the consequential knowledge is mostly held by individuals. You know, people may not know a lot about science or medicine, but they know their body and they have opinions. And if things are explained to them properly, they can make good decisions. And I think there's too much of, oh, people don't take care of themselves. We need to make them take care of themselves and we know better. I think there's a lot of that. And we need to respect our patients, our customers, and, you know, talk to them like the human beings they are, the unique people that they are, and trust them to make those, you know, there's a lot of lip service now about the shared decision making, but really mean it. Really share the decision making. People are capable of doing that. Most people are.
It's very interesting because this idea of having full-fledged, informed discussions with the patient really came up with this whole COVID vaccination thing, where some doctors were cowed into not giving the full picture. Now, whether you want to get a messenger RNA COVID vaccine or not isn't the issue here. It's more having the doctor sit down and talk to the patient and giving the pros and cons of both sides. And some arenas made the doctors feel like they were criminal if they gave any cons and didn't just sit there and give all the pros. Well, with any procedure, and certainly I practiced my whole life doing really death-defying procedures on patients, that you want to give full informed consent. And in any other venue, you'd be told, well, you're not a good doctor because you didn't have a full open discussion with the patient. And like you say, treating the patients as though they're children and can't understand and can't come to a conclusion on their own and with your help.
Yes. Well, so on the coast of Oregon, we had a lot of, you know, kind of pioneer stock people who'd, I had one gentleman who'd actually arrived there in a covered wagon when he's deceased now. But you have these older, very respectful patients and you lay out the whole scenario and these are the choices. And they would say, "You're the doctor." I just kind of, you've heard it. I just smile and say, well, I can decide if you'd like me to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, for sure. We need to give people that, you know, if people are hesitant, we need to give them that time and, you know, respect that their questions are good and that not everybody is just convinced. And they have the right to say no. It is their body. They really do have that right. And we should not shame them. Or belittle them, and should not shame or belittle doctors who have questions, you know, either. We should all be skeptical a bit, but yet we need to make decisions too. So there's that balance of skepticism and not knowing everything and yet needing to make decisions.
And I think just showing that respect for the patient, they're going to turn around and show the same respect for you and what your decision ends up being. And certainly there's some things that patients want to do these days that seem like you're mutilating your body and you really don't agree with that. But you know what? That's why there's a lot of people delivering healthcare out there. If you feel that you really can't cotton to some of the ideas a patient has, I think it's your duty to then help them find somebody who's more to their liking. If you don't have a relationship, again, like we talked about in the beginning, of trust, there's not going to be any healing anywhere. And always remembering the Hippocratic Oath that why we're doctors is to help the patient heal and always be there for the patient, keep their, as he called them, sacred secrets. And you really can't do that if you're at odds, but there's a doctor out there for everybody. That's what I think.
Yeah. So we're both, I think, free market inclined and really that's about choice, you know, about you know, if somebody doesn't hit it off with me, you know, I mean, I shouldn't take any offense at that. If I'm not a good match for them and they want to go elsewhere, that's fine, really. And you know, I think that's one of the biggest solutions to our healthcare challenges that we have is more choice, not less. We've had a lot of vertical integration with the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, whatever you want to call it. And I think that decreased choices, I think that's a shame. We need more choices, not less.
Well, over the years, certainly, even with insurers, and this was before the Affordable Care Act, there was a time, and people will be stunned by this, that there were 900 insurance companies offering healthcare products, medical care insurance. Now, you've got five insurers that have half of the insurance market. So you talk about no competition. Competition has just sort of gone out the window. And then with the ACA, more people are in these networks where they don't have the opportunity to go out of network. And they're sort of stuck with what they were given, not even their choice. And we all know competition lowers prices.
Yes. But this is funny too, though. I think many of my doctor colleagues, they don't like calling patients customers. You know, there's a special thing about being a patient, the confidentiality, the, you know, fiduciary duty, all these very special things. But, you know, if they're paying and it's their hard-earned money, they're also a customer. That means they can take their wallet elsewhere. That means they can, you know, ask questions. And we're not really customers with medical insurance. We really don't have the range of choices that we ought to have. I mean, my husband and I choose not to have conventional insurance. We have, I don't want to make an advertisement, but a non-religious health expense sharing association, a backup plan. I like to be self-pay myself. I'm very particular about who I see. I don't want anybody, any insurance company telling me what we can and cannot have. So I do want to know the price. I want to know the doctor's training, the background. You know, I want to know those things. But I like to be particular, and I like to. I don't want a procedure that's not needed. I will do that questioning myself. Thank you very much.
And you don't want a procedure that somebody's second choice, because that's the only thing the insurer will pay for. That's the scary thing to me, when the insurer starts dictating, well, sure, you can do all the X kind of procedure you want, but we won't pay for it. But if you do Y, we'll pay for it. Well, I don't want to do Y. I think X is better. But that doesn't seem to count, and you can't argue with them. I can't tell you how many arguments over the years I had trying to get them to pay for various types of nerve blocks that were shown to be effective, but no, we don't pay for that. So I'm supposed to let the patient have nerve pain forever? No, you sit there and do the nerve block out of network.
Yes. Yes. So. Well, they really are manipulating care. My husband likes to say that they're practicing medicine without a license. And I argue with him back. I was like, they aren't diagnosing, they aren't treating, but they're impairing. They're impairing medical care.
Yes, indeed they are. So I think in the end, of course, Dr. Brown, you and I agree about cash being king, so to speak. I just urge the listeners to take a look at some websites that list folks who publish cash prices. There's one for the Free Market Medical Association. You can just Google it. And in the written lead up to this podcast, I have the links to these things, and you can go to the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. They have a link to cash practices. And I definitely urge people to go to sites that offer discount coupons, such as GoodRx and Blink Health. They have pharmaceutical coupons that will stun you. There was a Consumer Reports secret shopper survey, I guess you'd call it, you won't believe this, but they had sort of, they called it their market basket of five commonly prescribed medications. They went to different services at healthwarehouse.com. This market basket cost $66. At Costco, it was $105. And you won't believe this, at CVS and Rite Aid, it was $900. It's absolutely stunning. So when you see that price range, how can you not sort of start leaning toward cash and trying to encourage your legislators and anyone you know who'll listen to push toward that solution rather than more top-down solutions where the patient gets farther and farther away from the doctor and farther away from that transaction?
Yes.
What can you say? QED.
Well, because we don't have insurance. I think the pharmacies too, I mean, you know, those are employees. They're very nice people, but their employers like it when people have insurance and they charge those higher prices. And well, we can't do anything about it. Just like with the doctor visit, we can't do anything about it because they have a contract with the insurance company. Well, we don't have insurance. And we actually get better prices than the GoodRx because the pharmacy knows us. They're like, did you run your card? They have a card or a discount there at the pharmacy. I'm not going to name the name of the pharmacy. It's a commercial chain. And we get pretty darn good prices. They're usually better actually than GoodRx or any of the others. But you have to ask for it. And we always remind them and they know us. And I mean, we have no problem paying for the medicines that we have. So it's a hidden system, though.
But, well, that's the thing. And I think Dr. Brown sums it up when she says, you have to ask. And I guess right now, I have to ask everybody, did they enjoy the show? And thank everybody for listening. And just remember, we do have the question feature that if you have any questions, you can send them to americaoutloud.com/pulse. I'll say that again, americaoutloud.com/pulse. And you can send in your question and we'll get you an answer. And first names are fine. And you can get an email from the host and we can ask the guest. So I think it's a great feature. And again, thank everyone for listening. You're wonderful. I love the audience. And remember, we've got all five different shows all week. And as far as this show, I just want to thank Dr. Brown for coming on. And you have to promise me, Dr. Brown, you'll come back again.
I would love to. Absolutely. Anytime.
Okay. And for the listeners, whether you agree or have other opinions, please share the show. Thanks again for listening. And until next week, say it loud. I'm free and I'm proud.